The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre. Our packages are great value, and we constantly check our prices to ensure we remain competitive against other providers. Call for a chat on 01983 240 240.
Now, it's a Monday, and I'm very pleased to say that we've got Joan Ellis. Author Joan Ellis is in the studio. Should we call you Dame yet or not?
No, I wish. Not yet.
Now, we've spoken a couple of times in the last year, and you're a local lady with a number of books under your belt. And is there another one on the horizon?
Well, there's one relatively recently called The Things You Miss While You're Away, and that's a memoir, and it's based on my life, my childhood in the 60s and my daughter's in the 90s. But I was a single mum, my mum was a single mum, and it's basically saying it doesn't matter if you're not part of a sort of 2.4 family with kids and a dog, because love, as you know, comes from all sorts of unexpected places to fill your heart. So it's just a very upbeat, sort of funny but poignant memoir.
I'm hooked already, to be honest. That sounds, because I don't know, I like quirky things. I know it sounds that, you know, people say what's normal anyway. I know there's a great book that was out earlier this year by Francesca Martinez, What's Normal Anyway, and I think she's absolutely right. I'm guessing that's what your book would be, you know.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's those magical moments that we can all relate to. So it's for anybody that's been a kid, so it's for all of us, because we can all remember those moments with our own parents, and if we've had children ourselves, then we remember them again, don't we? We relive them. So it's just those happy moments, the feel good time moments.
So how many books have you actually written at the moment?
Four. So I've got three novels and that one memoir.
Okay. So how long did the memoir, and did it take longer than the others because you had to remember everything?
No, I've got quite a good memory, and I tend to live in the past quite a lot. I go over a lot of things, and no, I think that one was quicker because it's lots of short vignettes, so it's just the moments in time.
Okay, you might have to explain some of your big words that you're using. I'm thinking vignette, is that something to do with vinegar? It's not, is it?
No, moments in time, little short sketches, those moments that made you smile, that made you happy.
Okay, and you got a whole book worth?
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Yes. It's kind of written as an open letter to my dad, just in the things he missed perhaps with me and the things he missed with my daughter. But it's, like I say, it's upbeat. It's not a bitter memoir. It's just a happy. It's like snapshots in words.
Okay, so he's not going to read it and think he's disappointed.
No, sadly, he never got to read it. But it's out there, and I read it now, and I'm sure he'll hear it.
So because you've got, when you're writing something like that, I'm guessing that you've got to be so careful what you say, how you say it, because you don't want to upset people because they may take it the wrong way.
Yeah. I think you have got to be careful. That's why I made the decision to make it very happy and upbeat and all about the good times. And yes, there are poignant moments, because that's life, isn't it? Nothing's all happy. And if you make out your life's, you know, brilliant, other people think, well, why am I getting it so wrong? So the book says, yeah, we all make mistakes, and it's fine, and everything will be okay, and your children will grow up, and, you know, it will all work out, and it'll be fine in the end.
It sounds like a really good read. I am tempted. I am. I think maybe it's one of those books that you should read as an audio book. We were talking about that off air, and that would be a great one to start on.
Yeah, it's one that goes down quite well. I do lots of spoken word events on the island, and I did Corduroys and the Ventnor Arts and the Ventnor Fringe and the Isle of Wight Literary Festival, and that's one that makes people smile, and you can see and laugh, and you can see that everyone's relating to it, because, like I said, we've all been a kid, so you can remember those straight funny little moments in your own life.
Now we're going to talk about something you're doing this weekend, but before we get to that, I just want, because obviously there's lots of things that have been going on in the last couple of years on the Isle of Wight. Obviously, predominantly we have all these music festivals, and there are so many, but just lately the literary thing is really kicking off, isn't it?
Yes, we've got the big one coming up at the end of this month, so actually next Sunday. I'm on at 3:30, but this is the third year of the Isle of Wight Literary Festival, and predominantly out of Northwood House at Cowes. And we've got a fantastic lineup. We've got Mary Berry. I think everybody knows now that Mary Berry is going to be there, and I'm hoping she'll bring cupcakes and no soggy bottoms. And we've also got Michael McPurgo. We've got some really fantastic big names, yeah.
Excellent. So it's really, we've had a number of people coming in to talk about the books, to talk about the events and so on and so forth, and it's really, really good to see. I know Celia Imrie was a particular lady that was came in and was very vocal last year. She actually came into Vectors Radio as well to promote an event, which is really, really good. How important is it that everybody sort of gets behind it, that has some kind of clout, some kind of position?
Well, I think obviously the more big names and the celebrities that are involved, the more likely you are to get an audience. You know, people will come, they'll hear those names and they'll come for those names. But I hope they will also, as well as booking tickets for the big names, I hope they'll have a look round and see what else is out there that's interesting, that's fun, that they can go and see those events as well, because, you know, it's really important to have an audience and discover something new. So yeah, great to see the big names, but also pick up on some local talent. We've even got some poets in there this year, some fantastic people like Donna Jones OBE, she's there. So and really eclectic mix.
Excellent. So this Sunday, where are we going?
It's well, I'm on at Northwood House at 3:30, but it starts on Thursday and it goes through till Sunday, so it's a 4-day event.
Crikey. And what can we expect to see?
Well, here? Like I say, you'll hear, and there's workshops as well as readings and people talking about, you know, historic books and things like that. There's workshops, so you can actually get involved. If you've always wanted to write a thriller, for example, I happen to see there's a thriller workshop. There's all manner of things. So I think if you've got any interest at all in the written word, get down there this weekend and see what's going on.
Do you know what's really fascinating? I touched on a TV programme that I'd seen very recently, and I thought to myself, how can they, because it was kind of a scary, really, midwinter, it was on ITV and it starred David Threlfall, and there was this moment where there was a really, really scary moment where this person just changed into some kind of old guy that was obviously having some kind of problems, and it was a really horrible, horrible moment. How do you get that to come out, you know, when you're writing? I know we're going to hear some of the stuff in a minute, and it's just how do you do that? Because obviously you've got to visualize it, you can see it. With a book, it's totally different. You've almost got to you've got to capture their imagination, haven't you? How do you do that?
I think it's about getting inside the reader's head and painting that picture with words. And being truthful. I think in any writing, you've got to be really truthful and honest, because readers can suss out when it's hyperbole and over-exaggeration. So you've got to get to the nub of what you're trying to do. And like I say, paint that picture and imagine how you would feel in that situation, confronted with that person and that awful event. And then once you've done that and you're giving your own truthful responses, I think it's easier then to pass that on to your reader and to make it real. I think that's the trick.
Okay. Are you ready to do a reading now?
Yes, if you'd like me to.
Okay, no, I would. Do you want me to be quiet? Do you want me to give any sound effects or anything like that?
I think we're okay. I think.
Okay, so this is from one of your books, yeah? This is The Killing of Mummy's Boy.
Yes, that's right. So this is the one, you may remember, is based on my meeting with a real true life murderer, as my daughter would say, on a train from Waterloo to Portsmouth a couple of years ago. And people said, well, why didn't you just get up and move seats when he told you what he'd done? Well, the truth was, Ian, I was too terrified. I mean, he scared the living daylights out of me. And I didn't want to antagonise him. So I thought, let's keep him calm. If he wants to read my newspaper, he's welcome to it. If he wants to have a chat about the weather, I'll be polite. I think, unfortunately, he misread those signals and asked me to run away with him. Obviously, I passed on that fantastic opportunity, but it did get me thinking as a writer, why would a woman say yes? So what's that woman's backstory? So I thought it's somebody vulnerable, somebody quite frightened, somebody who's not making the best decisions, and we discover why in the novel. Okay, so this is chapter one. And it's Waterloo to Portsmouth, 2013. It was Sandra's first journey back to London since she'd moved to the Isle of Wight a few years before. Having a stretch of water between her and the mainland made her feel safe. The Solent could be expensive to cross. Some people even thought twice before making the journey. She liked that. Once on board, she found an empty table and taken off her coat before absent-mindedly plucking a stray blonde hair from her cardigan. A man was watching her from the aisle. She followed his gaze. To her embarrassment, her fingers were resting against her left breast. Flummoxed, she struggled with her case, making several unsuccessful attempts to lift it onto the luggage rack. "Here, let me," he said. Now it was her turn to watch as he swung the case up over his head and positioned it on the shelf. His white T-shirt rode up, revealing the lower half of his torso. Her eyes tracked the thin line of black hair that ran from his navel and disappeared under the waistband of his jeans. He flopped into the seat opposite. She checked her phone. No messages. She slid and slid the phone into the pocket of her handbag where she kept her Oyster card. But the travel card wasn't there. She must have dropped it after topping it up at the station. Luckily, the card was registered. Quickly, she took out her mobile, scrolled down the address book and clicked. "Hello? Hello, I'd like to report a lost Oyster. Sorry, can you hear me? Yeah, my name's Sandra, Sandra Williams, Dove Cottage, Isle of Wight, P0305AB. 5AP? P for Papa, no, it's B for... The man smiled at her and her mind went blank. "Bravo," he whispered over the top of his newspaper. She gave him the thumbs up by way of thanks. B for Bravo. Yep, card's registered. Hello, are you still there? Hi. The line went dead. Irritated to have lost the signal, she sighed and locked her phone. The man threw down his newspaper, making her jump and reach into the pocket of his jeans. Fanning out three Oyster cards on the table, he pushed one towards her. His nails were bitten, cuticles ragged and bloody. No, thank you, it's yours. Go on, have it, he insisted. No, I don't need it. I'll get a replacement. Why have you got so many? He shrugged, gathered up the cards and put them back in his pocket. Always lose some when I go to London. Oh, where in London? She asked, leaning forward, seizing the opportunity to talk about her hometown. Leighton. My girls live there. Hadn't seen them for years. He said it as if years was just another word for hours. She raised her eyebrows at him. Why haven't you seen your children for so long? Been inside, he replied, lifting his eyes from her cleavage and looking into the eye, keen to gauge her reaction. But what for? She asked, faking nonchalance. It's in that. A third time, he boasted, the fear he induced forcing her to hold his gaze. What did you do? I slit someone's throat.
I was there in that train. I didn't do that, but I mean, crikey, that's got me hooked.
So the opening chapter is pretty much what happened to me. And then, like I say, I've imagined who would have wanted him in their lives. And obviously she's got a backstory. So the people you meet in that first chapter are not who they appear. And they both have a different reason for needing and wanting to be together. And obviously, because of who they are, it has pretty tragic consequences.
Crikey. So that actually happened. That actually happened to you. You were on that train.
Yeah.
And those words were said to you. What went through your mind? Chapter 2.
Yeah. Well, having survived it, I thought I've got to write about it. And the book's actually dedicated to him because he gave me this gift of the workings of a criminal mind. And people have suggested perhaps he was a bit of a fantasist, but I don't think so. The things he told me, I've never seen in a film, I've never read in a book. I think you would have had to have lived the life he did in order to know the minutiae of what he was telling me about prison life, the crimes he'd committed, the sort of people he'd mixed with. It was a very sort of seamy side of life.
You're a tease, because now I know where that book is, and I need to read it now, because I need to know the outcome. That's clever. I like that. Do you ever think that, you know, because I straight away I'm thinking, I'm visualising, I'm thinking, who could play that part? Who could play that part?
You could play that part, Ian.
Thanks.
That's a compliment. He was very good looking.
Oh, thank you. has anybody come knocking? Has anybody sort of said, you know, this would make a great film, a great serial, a great programme? You know,
a producer at the moment is reading it, and... another producer has said it would make, you know, he's thinking more of a three-part TV drama because, you know, everybody loves this kind of dark, chilling, psychological thriller, don't they?
They do.
It seems very popular at the moment.
On most of the stuff that you see on the TV between 9 and 10 on most of the normal channels are kind of showing this kind of thing at the moment. And, yeah, I kind of... You want something different. You want something... And that is, that's different. It kind of hooks you in straight away. You're in a different environment. And, yeah, I'm liking the sound of this. And
this one's actually set on the island. And it's, you know, so it's set across Shorewell, Newport and Ryde. And people say to me they stay up all night and read it. And despite me saying, you know, whatever you do, don't read at home alone, for goodness sake, because it is terrifying. And a friend of mine won't let his wife read it because he said it's too frightening, which I think is a compliment for a psychological thriller, isn't it? Mm. You want it to be terrifying. But nobody's guessed the ending yet. They can't guess the ending.
Which is where you want to be, because yeah. I don't like watching those programmes or reading those books where you know exactly what's going to happen. So it sounds perfect for television. Perfect read as well.
Yeah, I've got some lovely feedback and people come up to me in Newport and say, oh, I've had that book given to me for Christmas and, you know, I read it and then I lent it to my mum and I think... You know, you're my age and you've lent it to your mother. You know, she must be a very brave lady to read it. So, no, it's lovely. We've had some great feedback on it.
Well, my mum, 80, she had it for Christmas last year and she read it. And she actually said that she couldn't put it down.
Oh, brilliant.
So that's probably the best way to read the book, isn't it, that one?
Yeah, most people do it in one sitting, yeah.
Because they can't just...
Because they want to know the ending, they want to know what happens.
Well, I'm intrigued. But one of the things you mentioned there, it goes across the Isle of Wight. One thing we're steeped in all this lovely scenery, and I'm surprised that there aren't a lot more programmes, TV programmes and books as well, that are featuring the Isle of Wight. And that's something... I mean, very recently I gave an idea to, I think it was, is it Joya Minghella? You know, and said, can't you get Dominic to write something on the island so we can have something here to show off what we've got? And I'm just visualising us going across Shorewell and stuff in a car and you know, I think it'd be brilliant. I really do. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Will you know anything by the end of the year, or how long will it be before somebody... How long would it take?
Oh, you know, it's how long's a piece of string. These things just go on. You know, it can happen instantly or it can take a long time. It's just one... There's no... definitive time for it, unfortunately. It's just sitting on your edge of the seat waiting.
Okay. Those people that want to now download that book, where do they order it from?
You can just go to Amazon and get it off Amazon, and they've actually got it in the County Press Shop here or Waterstones as well, and Made on the Wight.
Okay, brilliant. And that's The Killing of Mummy's Boy.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We're going to take a break in a mo, but before we do, who's your inspiration when it comes down to writing?
Oh, I've got Ian Banks. Ian Banks is fantastic. So many, you know, when I was at school, it engendered in me a great love of books. You know, I did it for English, useless at everything else. And that's, you know, I can't thank those English teachers enough. In fact, I've tried to look them up online to say thank you and give them a copy of the book, because they just changed my life. As did my mum, who taught me how to spell. And perhaps after the break, I can read you a little bit from that book that, says thanks to mum.
See, I'm just thinking now, how can you write a book and have somebody teach you to spell? I'm guessing, you know...
Oh, I was only five.
Because that must be a bit of an issue, wouldn't it? Because, I mean, my spelling is not the best in the world, but probably as good as when you were five, actually thinking about it. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. And it's 22 minutes after 12, you're with Vectis Radio.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone, 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
This is Vectis Radio.
Serving the Isle of Wight and beyond.
www.vectisradio.com.
Origins Theatre's new production presents Charles Dickens, Storyteller. We bring Charles Dickens back to life with a lookalike actor in period costume, reading extracts from his books, just as he used to do. It's the perfect addition to any event. A festival, a fete, a corporate event. a specially themed dinner at a pub or hotel. Find out more and book Charles Dickens for your event. Go to originstheatre.uk. That's www.originstheatre.uk.
Value Rent-A-Car, based in Sandown on the Isle of Wight. It's a secure online car hire booking service. We provide a low-cost, fully inclusive professional car hire and minibus hire service. We have cars available for rental from under £21 a day if booked and paid for in advance. We take no payments online. Our vehicle rentals are based on a full 24-hour period. Collect at 11 a.m, return by 11 a.m. the next day. Go to www.value-rentacar.co.uk or phone 01983 401 333. That's 01983 401 333.
The Four P's project is for 11 to 19 year olds and up to 25 years with additional needs. Presenting, producing, promoting and podcasting. Check out www.4ps.org.uk. Sponsored by CLC, the Care Learning Centre.
Check out the Riverside Centre Carpentry Shop next door to Vectis Radio. Skilled craftsmen have a small shop that's set up to donate to the Riverside charity. The shop contains nest boxes, tables, garden furniture, wooden horses. Practically anything wooden can be made to order. The skilled craftsmen are down to earth and really friendly. So don't be shy. Come and see them here at the Riverside Centre in Newport.
Always move forward. If you stand still, you die.
Someone famous might have said that at some point.
Or not.
Either way, we at Vectis Radio took it to heart. You may have noticed Vectis Radio has changed.
Has changed.
But wait, I don't like change. It scares me. I want to eat in the Wimpy and go shopping at Woolworths.
Woolworths.
We say embrace change. Woolworths is gone now. We've moved forward. We've now got Poundland. All right, that's a bad example. But most change is a good thing.
And we know you're going to love it.
Vectis Radio now has a brand new sound with fresh new jingles. And these ones really are brand new.
We've also got a new look on our website, vectisradio.com, including a brand new online magazine featuring news, views and opinions. It's called Hello Vectis.
Hello Vectis.
So say hello to Vectis and let's all embrace the change together. I'm Dominic Cole, here from 8 a.m. with the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
I'm the old boy, Ian Mack, with the mid-morning show from 10 with a little LSD.
And I'm Brandon Langdon, here with the evening event from 5.
Hello, Vectis.
Come and take a look around.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Call them on 01983 240 240. That's 01983 240 240.
So welcome back to part two. We've got Joan Ellis here, and we were hearing about the killing of Mummy's Boy then and how we were pushing it towards being a television programme, and I was kind of trying to boost my chances of playing the part by playing the killer during the commercial break. Oh, I slit his throat, didn't I? I do all sorts. It's probably not going to get me the role. Anyway, you're going to be at the event on Sunday, but it's running from Thursday until Sunday. This is at Northwood House.
Yes, and my show's A Woman's Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls. And it's celebrating us girls, really, in all our loveliness and wonderfulness, but also those moments when you want the ground to swallow you up, you know, when you're trying to make a great impression and you say or do the wrong thing. It's celebrating those banana skin moments, particularly my own, because I major in those, really. And it's linked together with all the four characters through the books. So you've got the, you know, you've got Sandra from The Killing of Mummy's Boy. You've got me in The Things You Missed You While You Were Away as a sort of rather incompetent single mother. Susan in Guilt, who's, you know, very frail and fragile. And Ella from Ad Girl from the 80s. So it's celebrating all their good qualities, but it's also saying, you know, we all make mistakes. But it's a fun, it's very funny. It's all about the perils of working with animals and children, like I did in, and celebrities in A to Zadland. Lots of celebrity anecdotes of the people I worked with. And like I say, so it's funny, it's scary, and come along, we'll have a laugh and a good time.
Can you tell us about a banana skin moment?
I've got so many. Let me think of one, a spectacular one. Yes, I'll think of one. Well, there was one where I fell down. Now, people said we would obviously had a drink, Joe. Now, Ian, can you imagine such a thing?
Not at all, no.
I just say it was a very wet, slippy night, and I fell down the stairs at Oxford Circus Tube in very high boots. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. My husband was with me. One friend suggested he may have given me a little push. So I fell down and I grated the side of my face. They're sort of metal serrated edges on the tube steps. And I remember grating the side of my face as I went down and landing in this pool, you know, ever-increasing pool of blood, and thinking, this is where I'm going to end my days, but sort of 6 foot under in the tube. So it kind of felt, well, okay then. But I thought, no, I can't end my days here. But I just remember closing my eyes and thinking, I suppose that is probably it. Next minute, I'm in a wheelchair being carried up the stairs by two ambulance men, thinking, well, if the, you know, brain hemorrhage doesn't kill me first, I'll be die of embarrassment. And it was landed up at A&E. Humiliating. The next day, I looked like Edna, the inebriated woman, a sort of very Phantom of the Opera. Half my face was all sort of mashed up and the other side was normal, and I had to go into work into an advertising agency and pitch some ideas. And cut a long story short, I wasn't allowed to go in and meet the client because of the way I looked. I looked so awful. So it was basically, give us your work, give us the ideas, and then if you could just make your way out the back door and maybe pop back when you look a little bit more acceptable.
Really?
Yes.
That's not so bad. I mean, I must have, you know, I'll tell you what, I can top that.
Go on then.
Very, very, about 10 years ago, I was doing, we were doing like a big show at the Garlic Festival. We had a, you know, the radio station had a big stage, used to get people on the stage, do fun things, get them off again. And this one particular day, we got this person on stage, and she was she came up and she looked like she was really, really excited. And I said, oh, you're really, really excited about winning a prize? Yes, I can tell. I said, you're shaking with excitement. And she said, no, I've got Parkinson's.
Oh,
that's worth writing a book. Oh. That haunted me for days afterwards.
Imagine.
But yours is pretty good. I think, judging by your face, mine tops yours. I've got plenty more where that came from as well. So, you're going to do another reading for us?
Yes, I'll do one from The Things You Miss While You're Away. People ask me why I write. Well, I write because I love it, and I think the characters need to tell their stories. But most of all, I write because after my poor mum went to hell and back to teach me how to spell when I was a little girl, I think it's the least she deserves. And just want to say, I went for a little while to a convent school, so I was taught by nuns. Okay, and this is called Not the Best Days of My Life. The best part of any school day was home time. How I loved the sound of that bell at 3:30. Spending the day away from mum with a bunch of nuns with odd habits was bad enough. Having to waste evenings and weekends doing homework was a downright liberty. I hated spellings. Never had a strip of 10 three-letter words evoked such misery. I tried to learn them, I really did. The trouble was, I thought learn meant have a quick look over before nipping out to play. I dreaded those Monday morning tests, sat at my desk, surrounded by 20 brain boxes, all with their pencils smugly poised. Standing at the front of the class, Sister Mary Frances looked as immaculate as the baby Jesus' conception. I was mesmerised by her wimple. "Does your head bleed when you stick those pins in it?" I asked. "No, it most certainly does not." "Oh, it's a miracle," I declared. She responded with a look that could kill. I was shocked, given it was at odds with the Sixth Commandment. She started the spelling test, slowly reading out each word. But no matter how careful her pronunciation, my brain couldn't even conjure up the letters, let alone put them in the right order. But I did my best. What more could Sister Mary Frances ask? Quite a lot, judging by the glare she gave me after break. While I'd been busy pretending to be a horse and racing the length of the playground, she'd been inside marking the work. Once again, I elicited a reaction that had to be in conflict with her Christian beliefs. 0 out of 10 again, Joan Ellis.
You are a stupid girl," she announced, her mouth twitching with annoyance as she nodded at the piece of paper on my desk. 10 wrong spellings, 10 red crosses, and judging by her expression, they weren't meant to be kisses. I smirked, probably not the smartest move I could have made. Her eyes bulged. Fearing I'd be turned into a pillar of salt just by looking at her, I stared at my shoes. They were nice and shiny. Mum had given them a nice polish over the weekend. "Look at me! Your work is on your desk, not under it!" Not wanting to lose face, I shouted defiantly, "My mummy says you don't know how to teach!" It was true. Mum had uttered those fateful words when I'd returned home yet again with another zero scrawled across my work. But in fairness to Mum, she'd never intended her comment for broadcast. 20 little pairs of eyes stared at me, all waiting for the hand of God to strike me down. Luckily, he spared me. To thank him, I said a quick Hail Mary and vowed to give my sixpence pocket money to a charity. Too late. The nun smote me down. "Mother Bernadette will want to see your mother after school tomorrow. Be sure to tell her, Joan Ellis." I went home, ate 3 jam tarts, and said nothing. Next morning in assembly, I sang the hymn and hoped it would prove my salvation. O Jesus, I have promised to serve thee to the end. Be thou forever near me, my master and my friend. "Joan Ellis, don't forget I shall see your mother after school today," announced Mother Bernadette. Sister Mary Frances looked smug, and I wet myself. I spent the rest of the day sporting a pair of dry but rather cavernous navy pants from Lost Property. I decided it was best not to dwell on who the original owner might have been as I waited for Mum to collect me. She arrived on the stroke of 3:30, dressed head to toe in ocelot and wearing her Mary Quant miniskirt, bright red lipstick and silver eyeshadow. Good God, I thought, adding blasphemy to my many sins. It was hard to imagine how she could have been more inappropriately attired. At least her fur coat skimmed her knees, and I thanked heaven for small mercies. Together with my wet knickers, I gave her the good news. She'd been summoned to the head's office. She took a deep breath and reapplied her lipstick. Not that she needed to. Her lips were redder than a baboon's bottom. As she sashayed into battle in her paint stilettos, I knew she'd walk it. She reappeared eventually, looking a bit flushed, but victorious, having explained her theories. I put my hand in hers and squeezed hard. I was so proud. She was my mum and she was fab. "Shouldn't have done that," she said. "You'll never get to play the Virgin Mary in the Nativity now, damn it." "Shh, you can't say that," I scolded, waiting for a bolt of lightning to strike her down. The following week I went to school to find my boring classroom transformed into a magical space, awash with colour and creativity. Even homework became a game, with Mum encouraging me to write my spellings on the back of our unused rolls of wallpaper. When she tested me, she let me scrawl the words on her formica-topped kitchen table. After she'd ticked them all, she simply wiped it clean. Never mind turning water into wine. I'd turned into a candidate for the National Spelling Bee. Praise the Lord.
Do you know what? That was brilliant. It had me kind of... I was hooked, but one minute you had a smile on your face, then you were laughing out loud, and then there was it was tinged with sadness as well. And you think, wow, that's all the emotions there.
But that's a typical sort of kids' day at school, isn't it? Those funny, poignant moments that we can all remember.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And that was from which book?
The Things You Missed While You Were Away. So that's the memoir.
That's the memoir. So that is a book that ranges from how old were your first memories?
Well, that was in the 60s, and then it's like my experiences of being a mother to my daughter in the 90s. So it's obviously very different times.
All right, so it's based in the 60s and then it leaps forward to the 90s.
Yeah, so it juxtaposes events that happened to Sophie in the classroom with things that happened to me and how very differently they're treated.
Something similar that I've listened to very recently, but it was one of those books that I did read about 25 years ago, Nick Hornby and Fever Pitch.
Oh, yes, that's fantastic.
It is a brilliant book. And he's talking about his childhood as going to see Arsenal play, and then later on he's talking about taking his own kids to watch football as well. So there is a kind of a similarity there, but everyone's got a story in them, haven't they?
Yes, all those nostalgic moments, because, our lives are our own stories, That's an obvious thing to say, but they're all rich. We've all got wonderful memories and we've got fantastic things we can mine and talk about and remember.
So what books do you read over and over again? Or do you, because it's one of the questions we were asking today, just to sort of chuck it in involve a few other people as well. What books do you remember reading as a child that you would read over and over again? And what now would you read?
I used to read a lot of Beatrix Potter, and I'm sure... I mean, it's lovely to see they're still in print, they're still going, those beautiful illustrations that are so evocative, and I obviously read them to Sophie. And there's a lot in them. They've all got a little moral, they've all got a tale. Very, very beautiful. I was recently asked at a literary event what was my favourite book, and everybody was bringing in some very highbrow tomes, and I turned up with The Tale of Peter Rabbit. But the audience loved it because I think virtually everyone in the audience could relate to that book, whereas perhaps they hadn't read the other ones, but they'd all read or knew about The Tale of Peter Rabbit.
Yeah, I think I've read that, and it's something my mum would have painted as well. She does an awful lot of painting, as something she would have done. But it's fascinating. It really is, and I know that I'm kicking myself because I don't read enough. I know that, you know, it's having the time to sort of sit down, and I find it a struggle to actually concentrate.
Find somebody, you know, funny, I think you know Garrison Keillor, I think you'd love him because he was a broadcaster in America and he writes a lot about that. Very funny. I think you could relate to that, and they're all little small short stories, so you can just goings on at Lake Wobegon. Like Lake Wobegon Days is one of the books. Very, very funny.
Do you know what? It takes me back, hearing you read, it takes me back to my own school days when I used to sit cross-legged on a classroom floor and listen intently to, you know, someone telling you a wonderful story. And I don't know whether it's just laziness with me or that's how it was inbred. That was, you know, someone else read to you.
I think that's another joy, isn't it? Reading yourself is one pleasure. Being read to is entirely another, isn't it? It's different. You can completely relax and just let your imagination go wild.
So are you working on something at the moment? Did you say you were working on a new book?
I've got a thriller bubbling away. I think that's the genre. Although I like writing the funny stuff very much. They particularly like The Killing of Mummy's Boy, so people seem to love the darker side of life.
How does it all come about then? When you think, right, okay, do you, are you out and about and you see something that you think, right, okay, I'm going to write about that, or is it something you've seen on the television? I know, you know, you're not going to steal somebody else's idea, but I mean, how do you come up with something, your own idea?
I think, well, most of mine are based on something, like Even Guilt is based on a sort of tragic tale, so most of mine are, I can mine my own life or friends or family, and but then it's fictionalized, then it's exaggerated. So you'll take the germ of something that happened and expand on that and take it into a completely different place. And it might just be a somebody's personality trait that you exaggerate and think, where could that go? If that person was really given free rein to do whatever they wanted, just how bad, how nasty could they be? You know, what havoc could they create? So for me, it's about walking a mile in their shoes, really getting under their skin. So in writing these books, like The Killing of Mummy's Boy, I became the killer. I became Sandra, who's slightly on the edge, slightly unhinged. And I became Mummy's Boy. I became her son, Carl, who's very unpleasant. He's a really nasty piece of work. And you go into quite a disturbing place, you know, for about a year while I was writing that.
Do you worry other people when you come out with this kind of stuff? Does it, you know, does your family look at you and think... That's the sort of stuff that you're thinking about, and now, you know, should we worry? Do I need to go to sleep with one eye open?
I think my husband sleeps with one eye open and he's never too sure, you know, when I approach him, is it going to be, say, would you like a cup of tea, or if I might about to stab him? But no, I think, because I also write funny stuff, so yeah.
Good.
But perhaps that's even more disturbing, you know, one extreme to the other, I don't know.
All right, okay, I'll tell you what we'll do, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back with more. We've got a couple more readings to do. It's 18 minutes away from one.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Origins Theatre's new production presents Charles Dickens' Storyteller. We bring Charles Dickens back to life with a lookalike actor in period costume, reading extracts from his books, just as he used to do.
It's the perfect addition to any event. A festival, a fete, a corporate event, a specially themed dinner at a pub or hotel. Find out more and book Charles Dickens for your event. Go to OriginsTheatre.uk. That's www.OriginsTheatre.uk.
Having a problem with your phones? Need your sound system sorted out? Call Westwhite Audio for expert, friendly advice. Whatever your problem, just ask Kelvin on 0800 118 2484, email info@westwhiteaudio.co.uk, or follow the link on the Vectis Radio homepage.
Where do you go for a wide range of animal feeds, accessories and lots, lots more? Sandown Pet Store are the island's premier store for all your pets' needs. We are open 6 days a week on St John's Road, Sandown. Telephone 01983 407788 and speak to Paul or Wendy for a friendly and reliable service.
Hi, I'm Maggie Curry, established freelance coach. My work impacts lives and is a catalyst for life-changing experiences. I work with clients to encourage them to step out of their comfort zone, rediscover passions and be themselves. Calm and in control of my own life, I have more than a decade's experience in coaching and will help you build the foundations for your future. Get in touch today to find out how my inspirational coaching can transform first you and then your life. Contact me via my website, www.maggiecurry.co.uk, or through the Vectis Radio website.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666 or add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local. So local.
First question is, what is changing about Humpty's late lunch? Winchester, Shania?
I'm not doing the programme anymore. I'm off to university.
And what are the other changes? Twit, Humpty? Well, Humpty's late lunch is changing its time slot from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoons. I'm being stretched. And what's staying the same on Humpty's late lunch? Lazy? Callum?
Humpty will still be doing the show, and if he's lucky, I'll be in too.
So don't forget, Humpty's late lunch, now between 1 and 4 on a Sunday afternoon. More of a lunch brunch.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre. Our packages are great value, and we constantly check our prices to ensure we remain competitive against other providers. Call for a chat on 01983 240 240.
So, welcome back, part three. We've got Joan Ellis in, and we're going to get another reading now. You just asked me what I wanted, something spooky or something fun. We're going to go with something scary now, and then end up with something that put a smile on our face so we don't leave scared.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, this is from Guilt, and this is another psychological thriller, and it's about Susan, who was left alone with her younger brother when he died, and she lives with that guilt, and that informs her life so much so that when she has her own baby, she can't bond with it. So at that point, she knows she needs to go back and have a little think what really happened that day, who really was to blame. Was it her? Should she be carrying this burden of guilt, or was it someone else? So she just talks to Mark, her younger brother, sort of in heaven, and she uses him as a bit of a sounding board just to try and put it all back together again. And here she is just recounting an incident between her and her mum after he'd died. One morning I heard Mum get up early, straight after Dad had left for work. I hid behind the half-opened bedroom door and watched her. On went her satin conical brassiere, the one that made her look as if she'd stepped out of the pages of a sci-fi comic, followed by the pink rubber corset and suspenders. She rolled on her stockings before stepping into her red dress. She sat at her dressing table and stared at her reflection in the mirror. Just as if she was about to draw on the second eyebrow, she spun round, pencil in hand. I shrank back, but too late. She walked towards me, smiling, her hand outstretched. "Come on, let's have breakfast." It was a lovely thought, but even you must remember her idea of breakfast was 3 cigarettes and a pot of tea. "Susan," she said, taking my hand. Coming from her, my name sounded like an angel's. I was so shocked to hear her say it, my feet took a while to move. When they did, they followed her excitedly into the kitchen where she sat me on the wooden stool, the same one you'd climbed on to get Mum's tablets. I knew because I'd marked it with my red crayon, putting a little cross on one side. At last she was behaving like a real mum, fussing around, pouring a glass of milk and rearranging custard creams on a plate. "Don't tell Daddy," she said with a wink, just like the time she told you not to eat her sweets. "Dip a biscuit in your milk, go on." She picked one up, dunked it, shook off the drops of milk and held it out to me. I hesitated, never quite sure of her. She gave me that look, the one she used to give you, all smiling, happy. How could I refuse? I leant forward and took a bite. "Nice, open wide," she said, popping the rest into my mouth. "Now, you've been such a good girl, I've got a surprise for you." I couldn't believe it. The day I'd been waiting for all my life had arrived. At last, here we were, just the two of us, having fun. She was my mummy now, no one else's. "Come on," she said, lifting me off the stool and setting me down on the floor. "Race you upstairs." I set off after her, feeling happier than I had in a long while. When we got to the landing, she ushered me into her bedroom. I stood in the doorway, not wanting to go in, but she gave me a shove. Nothing forceful, but enough to make me move. The curtains were still drawn, making the room dark and unfriendly. The air smelt of stale cigarette smoke. But none of that mattered as I followed her over to the cupboard. You remember, the one where she kept the cardboard tubes containing those rubber corsets. "Look, I've taken everything out to give us room to play," she explained, when she saw my quizzical expression at the empty cupboard. "This can be our secret hiding place, Susan." She'd used my name again and wanted to play with me. What more could I want? I was so happy. "What shall we play?" "I know. Hide and seek," she said, ushering me inside. "But you know where I am," I protested. "I do, but Daddy doesn't. He'll have to find us both when he comes home." When she smiled at me, it was the best feeling in the world, like eating warm toast. "Okay, Susan," she asked, and I nodded enthusiastically. She was looking at me all funny. I thought perhaps she wanted me to move so she could get in too, so I pressed myself against the back of the wardrobe to make room for her. I was so excited I let out a little giggle. She put her finger to her lips. Her nails were bright red to match her dress. "Shh, be quiet." She widened her eyes like a cat's. I didn't want to upset her, not with her being so nice. "I'm going to hide in the garden. Who'll Daddy find first, do you think?" She gave me two biscuits from her dress pocket. I looked at the custard creams, wondering how on earth I could eat them quietly. "Mummy?" Somehow the word escaped. I'd spoken it so many times in my head, but never once out loud. It was your name for her. But you weren't there, so I thought it was okay for me to say it. I pursed my lips together to make the M sound again, but her kiss silenced me, her lips briefly brushing my cheek. They were all soft and warm, just as I'd imagined. She stepped back and smiled at me before slamming the door shut.
Wow. Apologies for all the noise in the background. Obviously, you won't be fighting the elements on Sunday. But we've got Bill in, otherwise known as Anastasia, and she's a real bookworm. She's also in the process of reviewing books these days. So do you want to just give us a little review on what you've just heard? And I'm not talking about the racket in the background.
That was really, really good. I love how you can, like, image what's going on with just what you've given me. That was really good.
Thank you. Would you like to read it?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Good.
Okay. Would you do a review on it as well? Would you welcome that?
Yes. Yeah, great. Always good to have feedback. Always good to have reviews. It's a lot. They're like gold dust. So if you can sprinkle some magic with your words, that would be great.
I'd love to.
How many books a week do you read?
It depends on how busy I am, but at least 4-5.
And your favourite book ever is Jane Eyre, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you could read that over and over again.
I could.
Did you tell us what book you could read over and over again?
Well, I love Dorothy Parker. Do you like her? know, the kind of wit and wisdom of her, the quotes she does. She's very smart.
No, I didn't.
Ah, I think you'd enjoy her. Yeah.
A few people have been in touch with, you know, their favourite authors. Maggie Curry says, I have many favourite authors. I have read Alice in Wonderland several times, Winnie the Pooh many times, and I don't know what that says. Gormenghast? Is that Gormenghast? Have you heard of that? David Doyle says, Roddy Doyle, the woman who walked into doors. Kelvin Curry says, Arthur C. Clarke, A Fall of Moon Dust and Glide Path. I've never heard of most of these, I must admit. Philip says, I don't really read books, but if I did, it would be H.D. Wells. Lisa Burt says, Wicked by Gregory Maguire. Are any of these ringing any bells with you?
Paddy Clarke. I've read Paddy Clarke, Ha Ha Ha. So I imagine the woman that walks into doors is just as brilliant. It's very funny.
Okay. And and then you've commented as well. I met a killer who turned me into a thriller writer. Hear all about it on Monday. And there we have. Now, are we going to go out with something funny? Something witty?
Yeah, well, we go out with I'm Ella By Me, so that's based on my life in advertising in the 80s when, well, these are my pratfall moments. This was probably me at my worst, yeah.
Okay, I look forward to hearing this then.
Okay, so it's a fictionalised version. It's kind of Mad Men meets Bridget Jones, really.
Oh.
Yeah. Me with my sort of flat chest and fat thighs. You can see it now, can't you, Ian?
No, I think you look absolutely lovely to me.
Okay.
Perfect.
So here's Ella. And she's at a client dinner, you know, in Mayfair. Peter, with her horrific boss, Peter. So Peter orders a bottle of Sancerre and two bottles of Chateau Neuf de Pape as I study the menu. Monkfish in a saffron reduction sounds interesting. How different from the frozen boil-in-the-bag cod Mum and I lived off. Peter wants a sea bass. It's his favourite. Not to be outdone by Macho Mike's rare fillet of beef, he orders steak tartare, raw minced beef steak, topped with an egg yolk, which is about as alpha male as you can get in Mayfair. CBO is very excited about working with you, says Peter. Likewise, here's to a long and happy marriage, says Mike. I'll give it 6 months and hope Peter has a good divorce lawyer. The place is a renowned celebrity haunt. Bored and frustrated, I look around hoping to see someone famous, an actress or model dining on a designer lettuce leaf. I don't recognise anyone. Peter and Mike talk at length about their respective cars and houses. It seems the client's Morgan trumps Peter's Porsche, but Peter's Highgate postcode beats Mike's Morden. Peter knows it's smarter to let the client win and omits to mention his heated indoor pool. Mercifully, our waiter reappears with our meals, three large white plates of beautiful food. But the portions are so small they look more like appetizers than main courses. Mine consists of small but perfectly cooked cubes of monkfish arranged not on a skewer but on a toothpick. Half a baby tomato is concealed under a bonsai basil leaf. It takes me a moment to finish. I select a chunk of dark brown wholemeal studded bread with walnuts and sultanas and smother it in butter. Fold it over several times. It's small enough to squash into my mouth as fast as I can. Just as I'm about to start chewing, Peter notices my empty plate. How is your fish, Ella? He asks, pretending to care to impress Mike. But my mouth is too full to speak. I could spit the lot into my napkin, but Mike is watching me. I swallow hard, but the lump catches in my throat. I take a mouthful of wine to try and force it down. My eyes are watering. I'm sweating. Breathe. Must get out. Can't open the door. Push, pull, push, pull. Choking. Door opens. Squat on the pavement and retch it up like an alley cat having a furball. When I arrive back at the table, Peter and Mike are lolling in their chairs, clutching half-drunk glasses of wine, barely aware I'm alive, let alone I almost died. Aye, so it's really handy to have a girl on this account. They know all about hairspray and that kind of girly stuff, don't they, Pete? Says Mike. I don't use high-pro hairspray. Then again, I didn't drive when I won awards on a car account either. You see, it's about being creative. Men already work on perfume accounts. They'll be advertising tampons next. The drinks, bypassing my virtually empty stomach, have shot to my head and are now doing all the talking. The client looks uneasy. Peter looks unhinged. Whoa, I hear you, says Mike, throwing the napkin onto the table. Reel her in, Peter. Next time, leave the little woman at home, eh? No problem, Mike. Next time, I'll bring some real totty.
You do the male chauvinist guy very well. That was brilliant. And that was from...
I'm Ella By Me.
Okay.
So that's the sort of chick lit. Yeah.
And are you going to be doing these on Sunday as well?
Yes, I'll be doing all four. Like I say, we'll be doing the women, so Ella, Susan, Sandra, and then me as the single mum from The Things You Miss While You're Away, okay. Linking them all.
And that's on at Northwood House?
Northwood House, 3:30 Sunday.
3:30. Is there a cost or is it a charge? Have you got a book?
All the events are sort of ticketed, and there is a cost, but I'm giving away a free book with every ticket.
Okay, brilliant. Is there somewhere where we can find your books, on a website maybe?
You can find them all on Amazon, all downloaded, and they're all actually just 99p at the moment.
Wow, yeah. 99p. Do you hear that, Bill?
Yeah.
You can get your pocket money out and buy yourself a couple of books, can't you? And do a review as well. Brilliant. So they're all on Amazon.
They're all on Amazon.
And if we go to Amazon, just type in Joan Ellis and it'll be there.
Yeah, and you can see the reviews. You can see what other people say about them. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's really, really lovely to see you.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely as always.
No, thank you. I mean, you're the one that did all the work.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
I reckon it's got to be 2016. You've got to bring out an audio book.
Oh, definitely.
You've proved in the last hour that you could do this standing on your head.
Oh, we'll do it together.
Okay, all right. I like the sound of that. Thank you for coming in. Thank you, Bill.